Bosk and some other community, I forgot what it's called, in Litter on Shabbos. So it's a very beautiful sefer. I highly recommend it. He became very close with Rav Shlomo Eliashiv, who of course wrote Leshem Shvoi VaAchlama. It's one of the great Sfarim of Kabbalah, and he was the grandfather of Rabbi Yoshiv, the contemporary Poisek. So he was a Talmud of the Leshem for a while. Eventually became Rav Boisk. That, again, that's where we have his droshes from. Then Yafo, eventually. Then there's famous, he went on a tshuva campaign. I don't know if you heard of that, the Masa HaTshuva with Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, Rav Charlap, and Rav Yadler. So as you know, Rav Kook and Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld had very different worldviews, but they believed that it was important to try to be Makarev the Yidden in Eretz Yisrael. They went around to different moshavim and kibbutzim and had a whole... They spent weeks traveling around Eretz Yisrael trying to be Makarev people. There's a story told about they went to a moshav, forgot the name of the moshav. It was mainly Jews from Lublin who were completely, completely secular. Completely secular. And each of them gave a drosha. And at the end, and they were sitting around, Rav Kook, nothing had made much of an impression. Rav Kook started to sing a nigun that he'd heard from Lublin. And they all started joining in with him and crying. And they all got up and started dancing. And apparently that had a huge impact on the people. They decided to kush the kitchen. Again, can't confirm this, but it's very, very possible. So anyway, he was going to speak at the Agudas Yisrael, Knesset Gedola, in 1914, and join the Moetzes. Again, you know, obviously different hashkofas from many of the members of Moetzes, but nevertheless, they respected him as a gon, and he respected them, and unfortunately, he was not able to attend. World War I got in the way. He went to Switzerland, then later on, he went to London, where he had a contract as a rov with Machzik Adas, where specified in the contract was that as soon as it would have become politically or feasible for him to move back to Eretz Yisrael, the contract's over. So, from his time in London, we have some beautiful droshes, actually, one of his droshes about where he was encouraging people to buy the Arab Aminium only from Eretz Yisrael to support the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, to support the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, many other things that people say that when he used to walk to Shul, Machzik Adas, people would come out of their, on Shabbos morning, people would come out of their houses to watch him. And in the words of one of the non-Jews in the street, who said, he says, it was like watching an angel walking down the streets. That's why I'd like to do that. So anyway, that's... but he came back to Eretz Yisrael as soon as he was able to, 1919. He was the Rav of Yafo, afterwards Yerushalayim, when they started the Rabbanut. So he obviously was elected as the Rav Roshi of Israel, Palestine at the time, and he started Merkaz HaRav Yeshiva. He came to the U.S. with the Kovner Rav and Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein to fundraise for various yeshivas, come back to Eretz Yisrael. His health started to go down the tubes in 1929. When he heard of the Hebron massacre, he fainted, and he literally was sick for the rest of his life after that. It was, hard to know if it was a result of that or not, but he became very weak. He was nifted on 3rd of Elul, and just look who people who were in the room with him, Rav Charlap, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, Tzvi Pesach Frank, as Rav Roshi of Yerushalayim, Rav Chil Michal Tukachinsky, of course, very famous for his work on Shiurim, and of course on the Luach, and Rav Ari Levine, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, the father of the prisoners, and apparently they said Shema with him, and he was nifter. So his Sforim, I don't know why that it did not become more popular, but Halacha Brura, if you've ever seen that, it's an edition of the Gemara in which under bottom of every page there is basically a summary of the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch on every page, every daf of the Gemara. That never really became popular, even in Merkaz HaRav it's not that popular. Then he's got various tshuvas, Mishpat Kohen Das, Kohen Ezra's Kohen, Orach Mishpat, Ber Eliyahu on the Gra on Shulchan Aruch, Chidushim on Chulin, Mitzvah Shriya, one of the most... then he's got Shabbos Haaretz on Shmitah, Eitz Hada, Chavash Pe'er is interesting. It's a pamphlet that he wrote when he was a Rav in Europe, because he noticed a lot of people were wearing tefillin incorrectly. So he wrote a pamphlet of how to wear them correctly, Chavash Pe'er. And someone printed it also collected everything Rav Kook said anywhere in any of his Sforim about tefillin. Agadata and Halacha, etc. So it's like it's a very beautiful little pamphlet thing, Chavash Pe'er. Ethics and philosophy, as you see, there's quite a few, Adar Yakar and Musar and Rosh Milan, one of the most beautiful, Oris and Oris HaKodesh, and of course, Ein Ayo, which is his Peirush on Agadatas in Brochus and Shabbos, is one of the most precious works. Just throw out one idea, which I actually have here, is Rav Kook says that Maaser Sheni is a weird type of mitzvah, right? Who do you give Maaser Sheni to? You give it to yourself. It sounds like a scam, doesn't it? Just like, you know, what do you do with it? You give it to yourself, you go to Yerushalayim, and you eat it there. So Rav Kook says, very simple, we're called Mamleches Kahanim V'Goy Kodosh. He says, so every now and again, Torah wants us to remind ourselves that we too are Kahanim. So what do? Take the Maaser, give it to yourself, go to Yerushalayim, eat it, Bikudushu of a Tahara, and because you too are a Kohen. He says this on the Gemara in Shabbos regarding Hanukkah, because he says there also, you'd think, where should be the Ikka place to light Hanukkah, the menorah? In the Beis HaMikdash. What's the Mikdash Ma'at? The Shul. So you should light it in the Shul. Right, that's the Mikdash Ma'at. Ve'elehem Mikdash Ma'at. The Gemara says, Eilu bate midrashos and bate knesios. But we know that the lighting in the shul is not the Ikar Mitzvah. Ikar Mitzvah is lighting it at home. He says, same idea. He says, because what it's really illustrating to us is the concept that we too are Kohanim. And therefore, every home is like the Beis HaMikdash. And we are the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. And we're lighting the menorah in the true Beis HaMikdash, which is the Jewish. So that those two vorts, it's like just, I don't know, for me, I found them just amazing. Just what an amazing insight into Maaser Sheni. And amazing into lighting of the menorah. So that's from Ein Ayo in Shabbos. So we'll see. I mean, hopefully we'll bring a little bit from other works. And as you see, just in terms of his ideology, just a very few things. First of all, the unity of Halacha and Agadata. That's something you see in Rav Hirsch in a very different way. But one of the most beautiful ideas is that there's no distinction between, you know, the essence of Hashkofa is found in the Prate Halacha, and Prate Halacha expresses Hashkofa. One idea from Rav Kook, just a simple example, which is probably fairly well known, is that there's all in Klal Yisrael generally things go from father to son. Things like a Kohen Gadol and the Nossi and the Abbas and the Malchus and so on and so forth. There's a general rule that it goes from father to sons. The Gemara has one exception. Gemara Numa says there's one exception, which is the Kohen Mashuach Melchoma. Kohen Mashuach Melchoma, right, it doesn't go from father to son. And Mefarshim discuss why it is. Torah Tmimah says because the Kohen Mashuach Melchoma is the one who has to exhort the soldiers. And so since it's an issue of Pikuach Nefesh Mamash, he has to be totally appropriate. It can't just be because he's the son. Maybe, that's a possibility. There are others that are different, but Rav Kook says, very simple pshat, he says the idea of going from father to son is to show continuity. Natural continuity is father to son. He says there's one area we do not want to show continuity. We don't want to show that it's a natural continuity, which is in the area of milchama. What we're actually hoping is that we'll have a kiyum of no milchama, right? Lo yisagoy gocherev, lo yimudod milchama. He says, so when the mekoyim mashuach milchama is nifta or retires or whatever it is, it's not automatic. Right? Automatic means that we're assuming another war, we're assuming more milchama, right? And that's not what we want. So it's not perpetuation, it's very simple for it. But it shows like it's a detail of halacha, a relatively minor detail of halacha, which shows it's a beautiful hashkafic idea. So that's how Rav Kook looked at it. And the unity of the entire Torah there, you'll see he brings in ideas from different parts of the Torah. Unity of Klal Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, something which he obviously emphasized tremendously. And Torah and nature, we'll see in the bracha of Hanois and Lasech Vivina, which is a weird bracha when you think about it, right? I mean, you know, if you hear a rooster crow at 4 a.m, the only bracha I want to make is Asher Kitzrayim Metzloisa Tzivana Al Hashchita, right? Frankly. So Hanois and Lasech Vivina is not really what you're thinking about. Like, oh, thank God for the rooster, man. This is unbelievable, right? So Rav Kook, we'll see it more, but Rav Kook sees that as the tip of the iceberg of the bracha really is on the interconnectivity of the human being and the whole natural world. And the fact that the natural world is really here ultimately, anthropocentrically, for the sake of the human being. So, you know, you could ask, right, not from a scientific perspective, but from a religious perspective, why the rooster crows, right? I mean, I guess even from a scientific perspective, it's not great survival technique, right? It's like here I am, right? Come and eat me. You know, but really, we would look at it as the first manifestation of the interconnectivity of everything in the world to the human being, to the Oved Hashem, who is woken by the. So that's how he looks at it. So it's a very just a different view of life. This famous story in Tzaddik in Our Time, Rav Arya Levine is walking along with Rav Kook. And you know how sometimes you just pull a leaf off a tree. And, you know, so they're walking along, he pulls a leaf off the tree, and Rav Kook stops. He says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Nothing." He says, "Well, not nothing. You're disturbing a living thing for no reason whatsoever." It's like, you know, so Rav Arya Levine learnt from that a very interesting perspective. So nationhood and Torah, he says, to separate le'umiyut, nationhood, from Torah, right? Because as we know, it's a hybrid, right? So you can't, like the Rambam says, we discussed this in the Ikrim, the Rambam, Pirkei Gimel Hilchos Teshuva, one of the people he calls a, and Rav Kook quotes this often, but one of the people that he calls a mumar. What's a mumar? You've got a min, who's someone who denies basics about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and you've got an apikoros, as someone who denies basics about Torah and Nevuah. Then you've got a mumar, which is an apostate, someone who switches religion. So one of the cases of mumar that the Rambam mentions is a guy who's basically shomer Torah or mitzvahs, doesn't do aveiros, but he doesn't do it together with the Jews. By himself, he's a hermit. Totally, every hechsher is 100% only Yiddish names on the hechsher. The whole works, right? He says, not somach on any, eruv chas v'shom, right? The guy's, but he does it by himself. He says he doesn't celebrate when the Jews celebrate. He doesn't mourn when the community mourns. That's called a mumar. That's unbelievable. It's a mumar means he's got another religion. It's similar to Yiddishkeit, but Yiddishkeit's part and parcel of Yiddishkeit is Klal Yisrael. And if it's not Klal Yisrael, it's not Yiddishkeit. So he says to separate between the two is just not Torah, not Judaism. Right? That's what we know, right? That Yisrael af pishachata, Yisrael hu. That's something which he lived, breathed, and emphasized, and understood that no matter how distant someone is, they're still Jewish, like the Rambam says regarding Yerovam ben Nevot Shchikat Somois, right, who was Choyte Umachti is Yisrael with Avodah Zorah. He says, still Mechuyif to sit in the Sukkah on Sukkahs and say a Brocha when he drinks. Right, still Klal Yisrael. So you can't separate the two. Sanctity, the importance of the Klal, importance of the return of Klal Yisrael. I mean, obviously here, he saw the return of Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael as something of cosmic importance. It wasn't just political, and it wasn't just, right, it happens to be, but it's actually the beginning of Geula and the end of exile and so on and so forth. And that's something which a lot of people just don't think of it in that way. I was speaking 2 weeks ago to an agnostic who's Hasidish. I mean, he dresses Hasidish. Father's a Rebbe, father-in-law's a Rebbe. I mean, it's like, he doesn't believe in anything. Satmar. And I was talking to him, I said, well, don't you look at the fact that there's 6 million Jews in Eretz Yisrael now. He says, yeah, but they're not frum. I said, so what? Right? But the predictions of the Nevi'im don't say they'll be frum, right, necessarily, everyone, right? It says they'll come back to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, atem hari Yisrael, ampechem titnu piriam la'ami Yisrael. Your branches will give fruit for my people Israel. Is this not happening? You walk to Costco, you see Israeli fruit all over the place, right? It's like, right? So I say, how could... And the guy said, I never really thought of it. Because in his environment, who would think of that? But Rav Kook thought of that and saw that as something unbelievable, partially from his Rebbe, the Netziv, who famously, when he got the first case of wine that was sent from the Rothschilds to various rabbonim and dignitaries in Europe that was produced from the Carmel wineries, he put on his Shabbos clothing to greet the crate of wine. And when he looked at the first bottle of wine and he held it in his hands, first bottle of wine produced by Jews in Eretz Yisrael for 2,000 years, he started crying. Okay, you know, so we look at it and say, it's not so great, I like Herzog. You know, nothing against Herzog, they're wonderful people, right? But it's California, it's not Eretz Yisrael, right? But I mean, that type of sensitivity, that type of seeing what's happening in Israel is beyond imagination. Every time I'm on the turnpike and I drive past Newark Airport and I see a tail of an El Al plane, I feel like saying Shasani Lace B'mokamaz, right? It's like, it's almost like it's unbelievable, right? Unbelievable. So that's what he saw, and that everything has a spark of godliness and good. We'll see. Again, I'm not going to go through this whole outline. I just want to give you a brief rundown of some, so for those who are not so familiar with Rav Kook, and then we'll start Be'ezer Hashem tomorrow. Actually, of course, it's Rosh Chodesh, so, I mean, I'll try. I don't know what time davening finishes here on Rosh Chodesh. Is it hard to say?
10-2?
10-2-ish, so I'll be here. Yeah, I'll be here. So if we start a little late, fine, it's not a big deal. Okay, so, but anyway, if you can get hold of Oilas Ria, the actual text,